Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc for all your custom content needs. Content is the way to listen. It's the way to build relationships in today's modern landscape. Visit www.conduit-inc.com to learn more. Guys, I'm pretty excited to bring you today's conversation with my dear, dear friend, Andy Paparozzi. The industry knows Andy. You guys all know Andy. He has been a great speaker in our industry. He was the chief economist for the NAPL for 31 years. He's now the chief economist for SGIA. And but more than that, Andy is someone who's got great passion for the industry. He speaks really, really eloquently and has done his homework. He's always, if you've ever heard him speak, he's buttoned up. He's got all the data. He's got all the surveys. He's got the numbers. And that makes it compelling to this industry. But what really, really brings it home is that he's got a passion for it. You know, when you immerse yourself in something, when you study something, it becomes a part of you. And I think that this industry is a part of Andy, and Andy is a part of the industry. So I'm thrilled. He's done some speaking for me in the past, and we've known each other. We've interviewed him a bunch of times. And I said, my gosh, Andy, I can't believe we haven't had you on the podcast yet. And I got to get your take. You know, I want to know where you're at with this industry and who the best are and what they look like and what they're doing. And, he delivered. He delivered as I knew he would. He was prepared, and you got to listen to this. So, without further ado, my conversation with Andy Paparozzi. Enjoy. Is this my good friend Andy?
My good friend Mark, how you been?
How are you?
Yeah,
long time, man.
Yeah, too long. How's everything? How's the family?
Oh my gosh, everything's going great. And although they grow up really quick, and I'm not kidding you, it is kind of like you blink, and my wife and I were just talking about this morning. Is that my daughter, and so my daughter's tall, I mean, and she's 5'9". And,
wow.
And, yeah, and we're like, oh my gosh, she was just a little nugget. So, you know, and I was just thinking about, do you remember, gosh, years ago when I was with Unisource, I had you up to Detroit.
Yeah.
To do a thing. I mean, that was a long time ago.
Hard to believe. I remember that very, very well.
I know. Time. How are you? So tell me, I mean, time has passed, man, and you're now, you got some,
yep.
A new gig so tell me about you and how that's going.
No, it's, I was very fortunate, you know, after 31 years, I guess it was, at NAPL, I was very fortunate to be hired by SGIA last July and to assist in a very fine research project they have there to sort of grow it out and expand it in line with the whole concept of industry convergence, of barriers breaking down, everybody getting into everyone else's business, and exactly the reality behind the motivation for SGIA's new trade show, Printing
right.
United.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, I been very fortunate to have a wonderful researcher there, Olga Doronika.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate to work with her. And I know that together and with the resources at SGIA, we're going to create a research program that I'm convinced exceeds anything our industry has seen in either scope or rigor. So I'm very excited and very fortunate, and I have nothing but fond memories of my years at NAPL.
Oh yeah, that was a great group. And 31 years, that's amazing.
Yeah, 31 years. I loved every minute of it. This just, as I said, it was just personally and professionally just the greatest group of people you could work for and with, and really dedicated to the industry and the membership, and was very, very fortunate to work for Joe Truncal and Greg Van Wert and Chuck Alessandrini. So I was, again, it's crazy how things happen in life. I spoke in 2016 or 15, maybe 16, at Executive Outlook. You remember that, Mark?
It's program, yeah.
Right before print.
Yeah.
I spoke at that, and who the heck is in the audience but Ford Bowers? And, you know, after the presentation, he comes up and he asks me, can I have your slides? Sure. And introduces himself and all of that. And, you know, I'll be damned. That's how the relationship started. So when NAPL was folded into Idea Alliance, Ford remembered my name, and he and James Martin, who was also now with SGIA, my old friend from Heidelberg, they called me, and out of the blue, and I jumped at the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're doing so. I'm excited to see Printing United. I think it's, SGIA has been a really, really neat organization for a long while. And because they've offered something outside. I mean, been interesting to me and maybe the industry, because it's come from a different angle, and it's offered and provided new revenue opportunities for commercial printers. And over the years, I mean, the commercial printers flocked there. So it was a well-attended show, fun show. I'm sure this one will be fun. And, I remember Joe. So have you talked to Joe? Do you stay in touch with him?
I should be more, I should be doing more of that. I just have not spoken with Joe, but we just exchanged emails about 2 months ago, because he still does consulting for a number of the folks he worked with when he was CEO of NAPL.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I can, I provide whatever data he needs in his facilitating and consulting some of the reports and the like. So we've been in touch, and I'm hoping maybe at some point he'll come over and start doing some work with SGIA.
Yeah. He's I always thought, well, I mean, all of you guys, I mean, I'll tell you the story and then I'll ask you some questions and thoughts. But I was, before I was able to get to a certain level at Unisource and where I was kind of running the marketing department. But before that, I was newly there and was kind of in a director role of some sort. And I was, obviously you grow up kind of in the paper side of things. I went to, what was it called? NAPL's the top management.
Top management, exactly.
And I went and I was like blown away. Yeah. I came back and I thought, well, one, I'm like the only paper guy there. So I felt like it was a competitive advantage.
Right.
And, I came back and I said, I don't know why we're not involved in this. I mean, it is a cross-section of our clients, our marketplace.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all thought leaders. And more importantly, they all have aspirations for, more. They're not there to just get to the finish line. They want to leave some sort of legacy. So I'll never forget. And that was the first time. And Joe was up there and, I've had a glass of wine or two with Joe over the years, and he's just sharp. And then, obviously I heard you speak, and, you not to lavish you with compliments, but you're so well thought of in terms of,
thank you.
I've always admired the the polish and the preparation when you spoke, but what really came through was your passion for the industry. You know, you can't tell people you're passionate. You just see it. You know it when you see it.
Oh, thank you.
And I've always felt that way. And I assume that over the years that hasn't changed. I mean, it's, you know, you've always, what I think I loved about you was that, you know, here's a guy who knows the financial aspects of the world and knows data and yet, could speak to the strategic side and almost some of the anecdotal stuff that had to happen. And I really appreciated that. So,
thank you.
Yeah. But so as you now embark on this new world, I mean, you know, what are some of the top of mind stuff? What's keeping you up at night, or at least, you know, really kind of floats your boat?
Well, you kind of hit on it, Mark. The kind of things that were always important to me is helping all the good people in our industry succeed and not just be profitable a year or two, but really understand what's necessary to sustain profitability. Because I know how these people, you know, they are the backbone of the American economy. They build a business. They treat their employees like family. They provide opportunity. And you want to do everything you can to help them. And a lot of it is, as you said before, strategic, because you can't really prosper for very long just chasing the hot market or doing what your competitor is going to do tomorrow or buying the same technology he or she can buy tomorrow. So you really need to think in terms of, my job is to help my clients communicate more effectively with their clients. And we have more ways than ever to do that. When you look at the number of new options and services that commercial printers now offer, getting into their clients' work earlier, staying involved longer, satisfying a broader range of their communications needs, really making themselves a part of the company's, their clients' strategy, and then not just identifying the communication problem, not even just solving it, but then showing clients how much they've contributed to their success. And that's what's making the difference, because when you look at the industry overall, and, you know, my problem always was, if all you're looking at is overall company counts and sales volume, and that's what a macroeconomic indicator, boy, you're missing the whole point. You know, you're seeing the superficial, and you know, when you look at that macro level, you know, you see it, I see it, everybody knows the industry's not growing very quickly. I mean, we estimate, when I say we, I mean SGIA in our critical trends report on commercial printing, which we just published. I don't think any of this is going to surprise you at all. You know, total commercial printing sales, that's from all sources, increased about 1.8% last year, about 1.5% the year before. You know, sales continue to grow modestly and prices continue to firm, but profitability is under intense pressure from a whole bunch of sources, from rising paper prices and rising health care benefits to labor shortages that are forcing the hiring of less skilled and less productive personnel, even in some cases to higher tariffs. So the challenge is getting that growth from the top line to the bottom line. And what you see when you look closely at the industry is that there are people who are doing that. Now, they're not doing it in the same way. They're not finding opportunity in the same old places or by doing the same old things, but they're really redefining their companies. And as I said earlier, it starts by recognizing that my job or my opportunity is to help my clients communicate more effectively with their clients. And it's very interesting when we start to ask folks about where do you see opportunity in the industry? I'm going to talk about a series of questions we ask our panel of commercial printers. Where do you see opportunity? And what are you doing to capture that opportunity? And this whole question of, so what are the keys to long-term success? What are the must-dos? And it's very interesting. When you ask this simple question of, where do you see opportunity? 19%, nearly one-fifth, say, I don't see any. You know, we either we don't see it or we don't know where it is. And that's not an insignificant percentage. No. But, you know, the other 80% or so identify more than 20 products and services. And at the top of the list are direct mail, and I don't mean generic direct mail. I mean targeted, personalized, relevant direct mail, packaging, signs and wraps and banners and point-of-purchase displays and promotion. And it's very interesting to the point you raised earlier about the kinds of things that commercial printers are getting into and why they go to the SGIA Expo and why I urge every one of them to come to Printing United in Dallas in October. When we ask commercial printers or people for whom commercial printing is a significant part of their business, because as you know, Mark, many of these companies no longer define themselves as commercial printers, mm-hmm. but commercial printing is still a major part of their business. Not only do they talk about personalized, targeted direct mail and promotion and point of purchase displays, they talk also about garment decoration and even industrial printing. Again, this idea of barriers breaking down, of changes in who does what and how and for whom. And they also talk about what are three absolutely defining trends in communication. You know, personalization, integration, and by integration I simply mean the combining of print and electronic media to create communication programs for clients. You know, this mm-hmm. point I've raised many times in the past that communication is mutually reinforcing, not mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of interactive mobile, even this idea of defining or including augmented reality markers that when read by a smartphone or something like that, linked to videos and content and graphics. These are things that more and more people in the commercial printing market are recognizing and thinking about. And what I find that the companies that are consistently successful are doing, and some of this is going to sound trivial. I mean, it starts with, number one, they know what they want to be.
Right.
And I say it sounds trivial because, but it's not, because these folks are constantly hearing that you got to be in this and you got to be in that. And this is the next hot thing and that's the next hot thing. And I have seen in my 31 years more companies fail and more than a few struggled, not because there was no opportunity in the industry, but because they chased the crowd into something that was not a good fit. And what I found that the winners do, the long-term winners, the folks who really are able to sustain profitable growth is very simply to resist that temptation to follow the crowd into the next hot market. And what they do instead is a very, very rigorous, careful calculation of what they want to be, where they want to go, what is and isn't an opportunity, given their capabilities, resources, and circumstances. And they then sort of, again, in the simplest language, they make it happen. Now, this is often involves taking your company in new directions. It's not as simple as just getting better at what we've always done. They do that too, because in the commercial printing market, in the increasingly competitive, complex market, you know, we are either getting better or we're falling behind. So the companies I find that are the big winners, sustained profitable growth, are certainly consistently getting better at what they've always done, but more than that, they're making these kinds of make or break changes in their companies, these kind of transformational changes of taking their companies in new directions. And that's hard, because mm-hmm. when you try to take your company, well, again, as you know, when you try to take your company in new directions, there's a learning curve, and there's going to be resistance from folks who liked the old way of doing things. And mm-hmm. what I've consistently found is that a lot of companies at that stage give up. They say, well, you know we want to go here. We know we probably have to go here. We've got to take these new directions. We've got to pursue these new ways of doing business, but too much disruption.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's a. I mean, there's so many interesting nuggets, and I want you to know, first of all, these podcasts are fantastic for me because I just sit here taking copious notes, right. And so I just was done scribbling like two pages, so because it's really good stuff. So at a bare minimum, I'm getting educated. But I a couple questions for you. Because I find it fascinating. You've hit on this, and that is that yes, everybody has to obviously get better at what they do, what mm-hmm. they've always done. That's right. You know, create efficiency mm-hmm. in the current world and execute better. Mm-hmm. But what's exactly. interesting, and I wonder, there's two pieces to this question, and from your perspective, because you have talked to a lot of leaders in the industry, and you've done a lot of, you've gotten the data dumps and that type of thing. And so what you were saying is that they know who they want to be, and which sounds a lot like, they know who they want to serve, and they right. know who they're defined by.
And
I was before, you know, when I was prepping for this conversation, I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm sure Andy comes across the same, you know, solid people that I do. And that, you know, there's a lot of people that would lament this industry and go, oh gosh, it's tired and blah, blah, blah. And, yeah. But I know so many that just seem to be alive and robust. Yeah. And I think they're doing something differently. And I wonder, when we peel back the onion, what are they doing differently to define themselves? I still think it's very, very few that are actually segmenting themselves mm-hmm. and serving segments. I still think right. that, you know, they serve the world and try to offer the world whatever, you know, they could be serving a balloon company one day and a construction company the next. And, you know, I think that the ones that can kind of segment themselves and start to design not only their business, but even their, right. their sales process around segments right. mm-hmm. that could work. And so I think, you know, tell me if you're talking about that one, and then two, how do you think that process of selling from your perspective, I always ask that of everybody, and whether they're sales gurus or CFOs or whatever, I'm curious as to how they're listening, because it's had to have changed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you're right. It does start with a process, and it's defined. It's interesting. One of the books that I cite in this critical trends report is called Leading Change by John Kotter, and what he talks about is getting transformational change right, and he outlines an 8-step process for making that critical change, that change that, despite all the disruption, you know you have to do. And of course, the vision starts at the top, that the owner, the executives are able to make a very compelling case for the change, for the new direction. They are prepared to answer employee questions on why this direction, did we consider other options, and why did we select this option? What does this mean for the company at large? What does it mean for me? And they're able to show that there is opportunity in this new direction, and we'll never capture that opportunity by just doing what we've always done. And that is communicated to the entire employee staff, all personnel. Now, of course, the sales personnel are critical to that, but one of the points Kotter makes, and I observe this all the time in the industry, is, yeah, it's communicated to sales for sure, but it's also communicated to everyone on staff. And you get across that this is where we're going, this is why we're going, this is how it's going to benefit us. And to be frank about it, we are going. We'll do. Let's not have any misunderstanding here. We will do everything we can to take you along, but we are going.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the sales process, they really, one of the most insightful, this is an example from one of the leaders I've worked with many, many years. The sales process begins with, again, a word you just used earlier is listening. And he said, I look for salespeople who can listen and who know how to interview and know how to ask questions. And he was even telling me that he sometimes will hire journalism students, because journalism students don't know anything about selling print, but so what? Or the kinds of services, not just print, but what they know how to do is research a company. So they can walk into a prospect's office or a client's office, and they've done some research on the company. They know about the company's challenges. They know about the company's issues. They know about the industry's issues and challenges. So they know how to do that kind of research. And then they know how to ask questions, and they know how to listen to the responses. And, you know, his point is, I'd like all my salespeople to have that kind of journalism mentality, where I'm prepared to discuss that client's specific company, that client's industry, that client's segment, and I'm prepared to listen very carefully to what they're thinking, where they want to go, and again, just the opposite of, well, I've got something, you have anything for me to quote on today? So, but it all starts with the vision that the CEO and the president have articulated, and again, it's more than just an academic exercise. They reinforce that this is going to happen. It's not an option. It's not something we're thinking about. It's something we are going to do. And again, not to be callous about it, but the idea is, listen, we're going to do it with or without you. So you better get on board,
right?
Because We have to go in this direction,
right?
And it's really a very and this is what Carter writes about, it's really a very painful process, and there's a lot of steps to it, those being the most essential. But it's something that establishes your ability to not only change once, but change regularly. It establishes your ability to react quickly to however your market is changing. It's not a one-time thing. The point is that this is a culture that has been established that change before we need to change, not when we're desperate, but change before we need to change. Making it part of your culture is what these companies are able to do. And again, I emphasize that it's part of the culture company-wide, not just in a couple of departments, not just with the owners and managers or even the sales team. It's communicated and reinforced to every employee, because the point is that you're going to have to change more than once, and you're going to have to stay aware of exactly how your clients' needs are changing, and be able to understand how you can best help them address those needs. So it's, you know, it's in a way it's a complex process, but that's the kind of thing that defines the companies that are able to, you know, make whatever's happening and what's ahead an opportunity rather than a threat, and right. and to do that consistently.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I think you lend it credence. You know, the data shows it. When you're asked there, you know, think about what you do and you know, for whether it was NAPL or SGIA, think about, you know, the consulting with clients, you know, you're going out, you're asking questions, and you're carving that data. I remember this, and I've probably said it before on my podcast or in one of my pub letters or something like that. I was asked years ago to be on a call, and there was probably, I don't know, 30 printers on the call. And I don't know if it was just a large peer group or whatever. And they simply said, you know, what advice would you give? And, you know, or no, they said, what would be the first thing that you would do? And I said, well, I mean, obviously the first thing I would do is I would want to see who your clients are. You know, I want to know who is it that you're serving. And then I would try to dissect them and find the commonality and even the differences, and so that I could put them in different buckets, and you know, I would start to organize around them, and I later said to them, listen, I could go out and you know, talk to you about hey, you should sell this or you should do that. We could talk about sales process. One of the things I said to them was I'd actually go out to prospects and or clients, and I would try to talk to their clients. You know, because imagine if I went out and interviewed, let's say we were trying to call on somebody, and I went and I talked to three or four of their clients, and I asked them all questions about their particular business. And I called that person, or I contacted that client or that prospect up, and I said, you know, we just did a study where we asked all the same questions of about four of your different clients. The results are pretty compelling. You should give me a call. I mean, there are a lot more, you know, all of a sudden they're like, well, who is this? They're doing, you know, they're an independent study group or whatever. So, which goes to this whole idea that, and that's exactly why I asked that question. And it's interesting that you got there too. And that is, and you even brought up journalism. And I, you know, I've been pushing it, preaching it. It's what we do for clients. And that is that, you know, brands, companies need to start acting like media companies. They need to start and I think it's inoffensive. You can go out and you can ask questions and uncover their story. You can gather data. Mm-hmm. And that's, I was curious if you had come across companies that are trying to act more like that. You know, the
print all the time,
right? The printing industry is an industrial aged mindset, if you will, and you know, it's got to get to a different place where you're defined by the clientele, and so you might as well go out and talk to them. And the challenge is that it's harder than ever to talk to them. You know, we can't just. I mean, remember the day when a salesperson could walk into a client and have the run of the place.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, today that can't happen. And so it's fascinating to hear you say that. And that culture, and that generates the culture, I assume, is what you're saying, is that when you're constantly trying to feel the pulse of your marketplace by asking them questions and trying to, you know, compare and contrast and maybe lump some people together, you do start to create this culture of, we are going to be, you know, empathetic. We're going to understand. Right. And that should allow you, going back to what you said, to create the habits or have that culture to make any change when necessary.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the end game here. That's the ultimate goal. You just said it perfectly, to make any change when you have to make it, well before you have to make it. That's one of the key things. You know, we're not making these changes when we're desperate. This is a culture that is built around, as you expressed so well, really understanding the client and the client's client, and then building a culture throughout the company of understanding that our job is to deepen that understanding, continue it, never be satisfied that we already got it all figured out. That's the other part of it. I see that a lot, that companies get to a certain point and they figure, oh, darn, we got this thing covered. We got it all figured out. Call it complacency, because that's what it is. This misconception that we got it going now, and then something dramatic changes, or maybe even not that dramatic, and they find out that in an industry changing as dramatically as our industry and as dramatically as communication is, and with all the changes in how you're in your clients' options to communicate, no one has it all figured out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to your point, that's why I stress it has to become part of your culture, because if it isn't, it you're going to be susceptible to this sort of fatal complacency.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I see that all the time. As a matter of fact, some of the most interesting work I did at NAPL was on what we call fallen leaders. Companies that really excelled for a number of years until something changed in their environment, until something changed, their clients' options changed, something happened. They really, and what we found out is those companies excelled at maintaining the status quo, or they got complacent and they figured that, you know, they had it all nailed down, and then one day they found out that, in fact, they didn't. And the way the economy and communication and our industry are changing, you know, change, Mark, used to be kind of gradual and moderate and marginal. Now it's rapid and disruptive and radical. And, you know, in a world where change is rapid and disruptive and radical, you cannot be complacent or believe you have it all figured out even for a minute, because if you do, and you're going to find that you're quickly falling behind, and you're just not going to catch up. So that was what I found really separated the long-term true leaders from everyone else. They built that culture of adaptability, and they built that culture of adapting around a profound, deep knowledge of their clients' businesses and their clients' industries and their clients' needs. So as you said a few minutes ago so well, that when you're changing before you need to change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that the fallen leaders thing is really compelling to me because I think, and this, and I'm taking up a lot of your time, but I think one of the things is that the relationship, when you're defined so much by product over the years,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, the next generation of product and comes in and, you know, it's like the 3D TV. Oh, now there's 4D. And, you know, it's, yeah. All, you know, it's our phones. We see, our phones in our minds become obsolete, you know, a year later. So, but I wonder if some of these fallen leaders did not have their finger on the pulse of the clients versus today, some of the people that you're talking about that have been so great. I feel like a lot of the leaders of this industry, they're involved with their clients. It's no longer mm-hmm. just some commissioned salesperson on the street
right.
that solely owns the relationship. There's a connection with the brand. Do you,
exactly.
I mean, did you see that come out of that?
All the time. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There is a connection with the brand. There's a whole different level of relationship. As you said, it's not the salesman dealing with the purchasing department. It's the owner and the president, the people who are setting the vision, dealing with their counterparts at the client's company and really becoming part of their team. And in fact, when you talk to these folks, many of them describe it that way. They say, we have become part of their marketing team. We are getting involved earlier in strategy. We're developing an entirely different relationship with our clients. And, you know, we're building on success with one client in this area. We're taking that model and building it with other clients in other areas because, you know, that culture is very flexible. It can be transferred from one segment to another, or from one set of clients to another. It's very, very adaptable. And you know, if you got it so that it works here, it will work there as well. And so they have a lot of success, not just in retaining current clients and building their share of that client's wallet, so to speak. They also are very successful in expanding into new core markets. And I want to reverse that, though. One of the things they do very well also is they do not allow client retention to be second to prospecting and expansion.
Mm.
Another thing I saw the fallen leaders do a lot was spend a lot of time on prospecting,
mm-hmm.
trying to add new clients, new businesses, new services, and losing client retention. So they'd be bringing new people in, but their share of the existing clients would be offsetting it all. So
yep.
And again, I'm sure you've seen that many, many times, but it's another thing that the winners are able to do. They at no time do they ever allow anything to diminish or detract from that client relationship.
Right. You could write the recipe, you could write the book, if you will. And I think that's another profound statement. And that is, you know, client retention is a big deal because, you know, the cost of retaining is so much lower than cost of acquisition, right?
Exactly.
And you can go deeper with your current clients and sell them. You know, I may have been selling you print today, but yes, tomorrow I might be heavily involved in all of your marketing campaigns. And you talked about, you know, cross-channel stuff. And, you know, and then when you're deeper into a client, you're creating higher switching costs. And, and then that lends itself back to what you were saying earlier around, you know, the definition of who you're going to be. And, you know, again, it has to be kind of who you stand for. And when you talk about client retention, it's a lot easier to go to similar looking clients or right. where you can start to lump them in. And so you can take client retention and even bridge it over to acquisition, but your acquisition is still in the same kind of pool. Whereas, you know, the historic product centric world is, you know, let me knock on this door and then geographically I'm going to this door and, you know, and, and it just doesn't work anymore. And so it's nice because I know you're seeing it firsthand with some of these, you know, these people that are doing it. And
They certainly are. And, you know, what you just described is exactly what they're doing. I always put it when I speak on these things, you know, I explain to folks that we are in a low barrier to entry industry. Mm-hmm. You know, your competitor can go out and buy the same digital press you just bought, buy it tomorrow morning.
Right.
So what you do is create barriers to exit. And long-term success stories do is they create the kind of barrier to exit you just mentioned. They make it painful. You used the term switching costs. It's exactly right. They make it painful for their clients to leave because they are so important to that client. They are providing services, whether it be database creation and analysis or some kind of customized marketing program, of which print is an essential part. But it's not about the printing. It's about how that program benefits the client. And they are creating that kind of barrier to exit. And they're able to, again, as you said, duplicate that. And, you know, it's a hell of a way to keep the client in, to maximize revenue from the client and to keep the competition out. And they are able to do that. They do not, again, I see so many companies that spend so much money on marketing and prospecting and they ignore client retention. And these companies, you know, they constantly are building those barriers to exit by getting, and as I said earlier, they're getting more and more valuable to the client. They're doing things that the client cannot easily get done by anyone else. And then they're also regularly showing clients exactly how much they benefit from doing business with them, how much money they've saved them, how much faster they got their message to market, increased return to their direct mail campaign or traffic to their website. You know, never assuming the client already gets it, you know. So that is a very compelling business model. And to your point earlier, you know, the woe is me-ers have had the microphone long enough in our industry. You know, it's time to tell this. And I hate to say it, even at NAPL we had some of that. But, you know, it's time to tell these types of stories. And as you said earlier in our, and I know you always emphasize in your communications, you know, the kind of opportunities if you're capable and willing to think differently about your industry and your business. I mean, if you're not, I guess, I don't know what I could really tell you.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, this has like been a blueprint. And I, you know, you think about when you started off and you just said, you know, people know who they are. They've done some work on but you also, like you said, it starts at the top. And it starts with what their motivation is. If they're literally trying to get to the end of the road, then, you know, that's fine. I mean, I suppose it's fine. I don't want to begrudge somebody, but at the same time, I don't see, hope that way. I mean, it filters down, you know, yeah. if the boss has no legacy plans, if the boss doesn't have a bigger vision, like you said, then, you know, ultimately it filters down and people don't get as motivated. And, you know, it's pretty amazing. So let me ask you one last thing. And before I let you go, so if you said to somebody, who are the people that this industry needs? You know, I mean, I know you mentioned labor shortage and I we're trying to hire some people and I think about it all the time. What do you think are the attributes that people need to find?
Well, I think you need to be, I'm going to go back to something you said earlier. You talked about an old industry. You got to understand the realities of our industry that, you know, our labor shortages are not simply cyclical. They're not just because of a 49-year low in the unemployment rate. They're structural because we have an old economy image. And that is our fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have great organizations. And I ask people all the time when I make presentations, how many of you draw on the resources of the Print and Graphic Scholarship Foundation, you know, that John Berthelsen runs?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever look at the kind of resources they have? Their graphic communications as a career brochure, their Adventures in Print, Choose Your Career brochure. You know, it's compelling. And, you know, we have to go into high schools and vocational schools, and we have to make the case for our industry. And we also have to make the case and understand that, you know, if we want to do all these things like one-to-one marketing programs and customized marketing programs and data analysis and all of this, you know, we need certain skill levels, and we're going to be competing economy-wide for those skill levels. The folks who have those kinds of skills, whether in consultative sales or marketing or data analysis, they can work anywhere. They don't just have to work for the printer across town. So, you know, we have to make the case for our industry. We have to be an employer of choice, a place where folks want to work. We have to create engaged employees. And in the Critical Trends Report, I have a number of articles on maximizing employee engagement. And, you know, we kind of have to, I think, get away from the idea that the person has to have experience in the industry. You know, we can teach the person the industry. What we need to do is on the entry level end, just go after people who they recognize the opportunities that the industry provides and want to be part of it. We'll teach them what they need to know and on the. The higher end, where, again, we're looking for specific skills, whether in fulfillment or whether in database creation and management or marketing or consultative sales, any of those areas, IT, you know, again, we just have to be able to really make the case for the industry, and we have a very strong case to make. It's just our own fault that we... You know, we haven't done it. And when I ask people who uses and who's aware of the Scholarship Foundation, very, very few, they look at me like I'm talking about something from the aerospace industry.
Right.
You know, they just, how do you not make use of this? And, you know, it's no industry thrives without recruiting and retaining essential skills from entry level to leadership and management positions. And we've got to get, you know, we talk a lot about technology, and that's fine and that's necessary, but it's not sufficient. You know, we have to be able to develop and recruit the leadership and management skills, and all the way down to the entry level skills that we're going to need.
Right.
And we haven't done that well.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, and there's and there, and I think it's we've got to focus on. I mean, that's I think that's well said. That you know, we're still marketing. They look at this. There's a perception, and perception is reality. There's a perception that we're, you know, we're an industrial aged industry, and you know, it's you know, I think that's the thing. And you know, now look, these great companies that we reference, maybe they're fewer and farther between. They're the ones that are presenting themselves as something completely different, marketing, you know, organization, or and so.
You know, that I'm sorry, but that you just reminded me. That's what they do, Mark. They build their employer brand, just as you build your brand with your client. They build a brand as an employer, as this is a place where you want to work, and here's why, and this is an industry you want to be in, and here's why. And their employer brand is as important to them as their marketing or corporate brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, and there's a lot of hope in that. And I think that's, you know, that's the thing that gets me excited. And just like talking to you, Andy, I can't thank you enough, man. I'll tell you what, it's been, we need to do this again because you and I could talk forever. I mean, I'm not kidding you when I tell you I've been scribbling notes and because it is a recipe for success, I think. And there is, I love your vibe because you've always had this voice of hope. And
thank you.
And I mean that. But yet people need to realize that that's, you can bank on that. This can be a soul enriching endeavor. And you know, you've done the studies and the stats and the data that have backed that up. So, you know, I really appreciate it. And I certainly appreciate it. Yeah. I will look for you at Printing United. We'll, you know, who knows, maybe we can steal away and
that would be nice,
you know, and, solve all the world's troubles.
Yeah. Where are you, in Atlanta?
No, I'm in Pittsburgh. Beautiful.
Oh, I didn't know that. When did that happen?
This happened in August. We've got a couple, you know, my kids wanted to do the hockey thing, and I grew up here. And so I grew up in Western Pennsylvania and still got my mother here and just that time. And you know, we still have part of our team down in Atlanta and now developing some new team up here. And we're creating a global organization.
Wow.
Not really, but,
well, it's amazing what you've accomplished. I'll tell you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, not to keep going on here, but I mean, it's part of it is a product of what you said. And that is, you know, when I'm talking to people, you know, you're taking journalism essentially as the bedrock of trying to understand others. And we've been able to morph, you know, Canvas has been nice, but you know, we're really blessed to have a lot of, different projects and it's all about kind of trying to keep your finger on the pulse. And it's exactly what you, so everything you said was giving me goosebumps
good.
I really appreciate it.
No, so. Not at all. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. And, of course, it's always good to talk to you as an old friend. And, you know, let me know when you're around. If you're ever in Virginia at SGIA or certainly at Printing United, you know, just keep in touch. It's been too long.
Yeah, I will do that. Absolutely. Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you.
I know you'll do a heck of a job.
Oh, we got to talk again.
You got it.
All right. Thanks for your time, huh?
Yeah, you too. I appreciate it.
All right. All right. Bye now.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Okay.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that. I told you he would deliver. Andy Paparozzi, chief economist from the SGIA, is a bit of a hero in the industry. I'm privileged to know him and call him a friend. And I'm really, really excited that he joined us today. I think if you listen to that podcast, that conversation, And take some notes. It's a recipe for success. And write down the list from starting at the top all the way down through execution and how you use journalism to listen. And I had goosebumps on some level because I just feel like Andy is someone who's committed to the industry and loves the industry and has done the work and done the study. And so it makes sense that we listen to him. So my thanks to Andy. Can't thank him enough. Looking forward to having him on again. A reminder that this episode of Brushstrokes was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. A reminder, especially after what Andy said, is that that's how we listen. We use content and the creation of content to engage in a really unbiased way. So remember to visit www.conduit-inc.com to learn more. My thanks to all of you for listening once again. Stay tuned in the next couple of weeks for another compelling podcast. And in the meantime, I hope you're having a great start to the year. And as always, be the buffalo.